Hey there, and welcome back to the Amateur Artsy Podcast. I'm Ashley, and
I'm Jackie.
So, for this week's podcast episode, we'll be talking about the film, an interesting, infamously shit film, called Birdemic, Shock and Terror. It came out in 2008.
So tell me more about this film.
So, it's an American independent romantic horror film.
That's news to me.
Yeah. Written, directed, and produced by James Nguyen. So it's inspired by Alfred Hitchcock's The Birds. Yeah.
Inspired. What a loose word.
Yeah. So Birdemic tells the story of a romance between two main characters as their small town is attacked by birds. So the film was largely self-financed and was produced through Nguyen's Moviehead Pictures Company for a budget of less than $10,000. The film has gained infamy for its poor quality, with many critics citing that it is one of the worst films of all time. That's just wonderful. So after a limited release in the theaters, the film was picked up by a distribution company called Severn Films in 2010, where it is re-released. So if you look online, we're a little bit confused if it is released in 2008 or 2010, but it's technically, it was released twice. So the original one was just by the Moviehead Moviehead Pictures, I think. Yeah. Moviehead Pictures in 2008. So that's Nguyen's own company. But then...
Company. Another very loose word.
But Severn Films, for some reason, picked it up and re-released it in 2010.
So, yeah. I am very curious.
Why?
About the thought process behind that decision.
Yeah. So, a sequel, Birdemic 2, The Resurrection, was released in 2013. So, clearly the sequel received even poorer reviews. I just, like, why?
I am truly fascinated, but not sure I could sit through that movie to find out why it was worse than the first one.
I was barely holding on when you were watching this movie. It was so bad. So, I found the IMDb description to be actually better than the film itself. So,
yeah, it made more sense, to be honest. Yeah,
it explained what was happening, because we were very confused while watching it. So it basically said that a horde of mutated birds descends upon the quiet town of Half Moon Bay, California, which I don't think it has clarified the exact location. We had to search it up.
Yeah.
Yeah. We knew it was America, but I don't think they specifically said it was a place called Half Moon Bay.
It might be interesting to note that in one of the scenes, there's a tourist bus which says Half Moon Bay on it.
Oh.
But, the whole thing was basically filmed there. And, yeah, it was inspired... James Nguyen was inspired by having a holiday there.
Oh.
And that's why he wrote the script. Mm. Yeah.
So, with the death toll rising, two citizens managed to fight back. But it ends with a question that's like, but will they survive Birdemic?
Yes.
It's like, there's few birds. Like, oh my god, there weren't even that many. There was just a couple here and there. And like, what they did was...
Were they actually birds? They look like birds in, I think, one of the scenes when they're really, really, really far away.
Yeah, that's the thing. I think he even said himself, like, because he did the budget for the whole film and stuff, so he said they couldn't he couldn't improve on the special effects, but at the same time what they did was they had two or three shots of the birds, and they just kind of reused that. They'd repeat it for like each scene, especially with the killing of the birds. They just kind of, every time a bird got shot, they'd reuse that one scene again and again.
Oh my god, this little clip of like a bird that's like up in the blue sky, and like it just like gets shot and then falls out of the frame. You were the one who picked this up, that like it just like it kept reappearing, in, like, not just the one fight scene either, even in, like, several of the fight scenes.
Yeah. Every time they showed a bird getting shot, they'd use the same thing of it, of that one shot, and then it'd just, like, fall down. It was so funny. Anyway, clearly it got a really bad rating. So on IMDb, they rated it 1.8 out of 10. And Rotten Tomatoes rated it 19%, with a surprisingly high audience score of 26%. Yeah. And I'd like to put this in perspective for when we did the Black Christmas episode, the 2019 one, that got about an audience score of around 30%. So, it's a, yeah, I don't know how to comment on that, but it's just, wow.
I guess some people find this film to be comedically bad, and it is in some instances.
In saying that, it's funny because James Nguyen, he's repeatedly refused to claim that this film is funny. He keeps insisting that his films are 100% serious, and he's quite proud of their message.
Oh boy. Yeah. Oh, sweetie. It's, he did not go to film school, did he?
Yeah, no. It's just, it's so funny. Like, there are, like, cult classics, but I feel like after a while, the director kind of realizes that it's a funny film. So, like, just accept that it's a mockery in itself. Like, with The Room and stuff. Like, Tommy's, like, at the start, he was angry that everyone was laughing at his films. But, like, after, like, you know, a few years, like, he kind of just accepted it. It's kind of like, eh.
Yeah, I made this really funny, very famous film.
Yeah, and they joke about it too, and it's like, you know what I mean? Like, you should, it's funny. Everyone's like, come on. There's no way that's serious. Oh, God. Also, an article I read that says, I quote, Nguyen spent just $10,000 making this film, but he stands to get much more back since it was picked up by a distribution company. Mm-hmm. So it sold out in cinemas in the US, and more money was spent on the marketing itself than the film.
I am not surprised.
Yeah, you can see that. If you look at all the posters, it looks really good. I'm not gonna lie. The posters look really good that have advertised for it. And then it's, like, really good quality as well. It kind of looks like your stereotypical, like, 60s or 70s, like a horror slasher film kind of movie poster.
Yeah, the movie poster looks like that kind of vibe.
And, like, it looks like they're better quality as well. Like, it looks such, like, the quality looks really good in it. And then you watch the film and you're just like, oh.
It's actually kind of funny because he uses the same font in the movie poster as he does in the opening credits. And in the movie poster, it looks quite good because it's like, you've got, like, the dynamic image going on as well as, like, that white text that's just, like, it's not taking away from the image behind it.
Yeah.
However, its use in the actual film is just so bad. It's such a boring font.
Yeah, because in the introduction, he kind of went for that super long intro. Like, they have in a lot of the, like, I picked up, like, this a lot of the 70s. Yeah, I think I put, like, in the 70s, like, slasher or horror films, or even TV shows, how it went on for, like, ever, the intro. But at least with that, they'd have, like, suspenseful shots here and there. This was just one guy driving with a shaky camera.
And deliberately shaky, I should add.
Yeah, and, like, it's pretty blurry, like, what they're saying. Like, the whole film itself was pretty blurry.
Mm. Would you like to hear a little bit about the cast before we get into the... the meat of the this interesting
Before creation. That the Severin Films, I just got a little thing. So they're the ones who picked it up in 2010 and re-released it. So this distribution company, they've picked up quite a few unknown occult classic films in the 60s to the 80s mostly, with a few stuff from the early 2000s and 90s. I did see one of the films that was called like a vampiric lesbos or something like that. I was like, what?
Oh my god, what?
Yeah. I think there's...
You want to know something weird? I feel like I've actually heard of that because sometimes on SBS they put all these really, really, like, really bad movies on there that are, like, considered, like, really bad movies.
Yeah.
And, like, every now and then I scroll past them and think, maybe I should watch that.
Yeah.
But I swear they've had that one on SBS. Yeah,
that's the thing, is the films that they've picked up, they're, like, cult classics, so a lot of them have really shit ratings. But that was one of the ones with, like, the higher ones. But I've heard of it as well. But it's just kind of funny, the films they choose to bring up and stuff.
Yeah. Very, very fascinating. I'd be curious about who it was that pitched this one and who accepted.
Because the thing is, it is already released, so they would have seen the film.
Exactly.
They would have seen how crap it was. I don't know. But I presume it would have made more money by getting picked up and re-released again. But yeah.
Yeah. So, in the main cast, we've got Alan Barr as Rod, who is our main character.
I didn't even know his name was Rod. I'm not gonna lie.
Neither did I. It literally, like, came up at the start, and, like, every now and then in the film they'll say, oh, Rod!
Yeah.
And then I'll go, oh, yeah, I forgot
but
your
name.
But
the thing is, it was, like, bad quality as well, the audio, so you couldn't, you know, it can be mistaken for other names.
Exactly.
As well. Yeah.
And then you've got Whitney Moore as Natalie, who's the, she's the model, which has recently got signed to Victoria's Secret.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I should add, Rod's in, like, IT or something.
Yeah.
I don't know. And, like, he's just gotten $10 million for some startup thing he wants to do. So he's, like, about to start his own business.
In saying that, I think, James said that he loosely based Rod off, like, him because he wasn't, like, doing the same job and stuff. Like, I think he said 60% of the film is,
autobiographical.
Autobiographical, and, like, the rest is, like, you know, fictional. But I'm like, what? What?
I'm curious. I'm very curious about that.
I was like, what the fuck? But yeah, he loosely based off Rod from, like, himself.
We've got a few other characters. We've got Adam as Ramsey. Catherine Batcher as Becky. Remember these people?
No.
Lol.
Basically, the cast is like, there's the two, the love interest, and there's the guy's friend. Then he's the girl that he's dating. And then you see, like, two random other people.
Who are another couple.
Yeah. And, like, then you get, like, side characters here and there, you see. Mm. But, like, I don't even remember them.
We've got Patsy Van Ettinger as Natalie's mother.
Oh, yeah.
Remember her?
I remember, yeah.
She was a classic.
Yeah.
I've got a news anchor listed here.
Oh, my God.
And a band member and a nightclub singer. And most importantly, James Nguyen as a restaurant customer. And that's his super cool cameo role, which I'm guessing was inspired by Alfred Hitchcock because he cameos in all of his films.
Oh, yeah, because it's like, he's, like, obsessed with him, isn't he? Like,
well, like, this film was based on Alfred Hitchcock's The Birds.
Yeah,
I don't know.
That's his favourite film or something. Yeah.
Sweetie. Sweetie. Oh, dear.
Oh, damn. But, yeah.
Mm. So, from our first look at the intro, I just, like, noticed a few things. Do you want to discuss, like, your first thoughts on the film as we started watching?
Okay. Basically, the first thing you see, other than, like, the driving, it's just kind of really long panning shots. Shaky, jerky camera panning shots.
Oh, God.
Very, very poor quality, and it looks straight out of the 90s. Like, it honestly, like, I compared it to, like, a really, like, they have, like, student films and stuff, but that is so much better in quality.
Mm.
And, like, back in those times, like, I get it's the early 2000s. But, like, still, there's,
it's
like,
the late 2000s.
The late 2000s, yeah. And it's, like, you can see, like, if you watch 90s, like, even, like, 90s, like, short student films and stuff, they aren't this bad. It's not this. This is, like, this is really bad. Like, we could make a better film than this.
We could.
With just the two of us. Like, oh, my God.
Yeah, the quality of, like, the picture quality, I had the same instant first thought, 90s. Mm.
Yeah.
And, oh my God.
And you kept bringing up the panning as well. You were so frustrated by that.
Yeah, there's this one scene where Rod is, like, crossing the road.
Yeah.
And so you get him going, he's just walking down the street, and then the camera follows him as he crosses the road and continues walking the same direction down the street. And, like, it's like the cameraman wanted to keep him in frame, but, like, and didn't know how to pan properly.
Yeah.
Because when you're panning and you're wanting to keep someone in frame, you don't, like, follow them. You just do your panning motion, just making sure they're still in frame. Doesn't matter if they're what end of the frame they're
exactly,
in.
Exactly, yeah.
Whereas this person was, like, desperately trying to, like, keep up, but then going too fast, so they had to, like, slow down. And it was just,
it was so frustrating. Also, the cinematography, so low quality. Like, don't even get me started.
There is just so much to dissect about the cinematography. So, we have a lot of scenes that are out of focus.
Mm-hmm.
And then, what else have we got?
Then you've got scenes with, especially, the girl's mum. Did you see? Yeah.
Yes! Yes! Okay, we have to talk about the framing of her. Yeah. Please.
So what they did was, they kind of zoomed in and focused on her and blurred out the background a little bit.
Which is good for interviews.
Yes, indeed. It kind of looked like an interview, but at the same time, it looked like, it looked really fake. It looked like they had, like, a green screen going on.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. The way they zoomed in on her as well, you didn't get her, like, you didn't get, like, a, like, they cut.
It was too close up.
Yeah. It was way too close up. You couldn't really see the background as well. Like, in turn, like, she was talking to her daughter, but when they kind of turned the shot around, like, on the daughter, that looked a bit more pleasing, because you could see stuff in the background and looked more relaxed. Then they cut back to the mom, and it just looked, it did not look good. Like, for a while, yeah. I was like, do they use green screen? Like, is this real?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just, like, the fact that they're, like, the way they framed the daughter was, like, so you could see a bit of the room around her. It looked natural. It's like, here she is, sitting in a kitchen, talking to her mum. When you cut to the mum, it's like, okay, the mum's being interviewed for, like, Channel 7. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just, yeah. Like, they should have framed her the same way they framed the daughter. So, like,
let's make it a bit more pleasing. You see a bit
more of the background, so it's a bit more balanced, and, like, she's in the same place on the screen.
Mm-hmm. It's frustrating, yeah.
It's so frustrating.
They did that a lot with, like, a lot of the scenes. What they also did was, like, with the scene in the restaurant where he goes in, they'd cut from one shot to, like, the next, and they'd have a pause and then go back to another shot.
Oh, my God. There was, like, there was a quote on, I think it was IMDb, which is, like, one of the scenes where Rod's ordering food.
Yeah, yeah.
And, like, it's literally, it cuts to Rod, hi. Cuts to the waitress, hi. Waitress, is there anything you'd like to order?
Mm.
Rod, cuts back to Rod. No, thank you. Cuts back to the waitress. Okay, I'll be back in a minute.
Yeah.
Cuts back to Rod. Like,
yeah.
Stop it!
I know. Like, they could have just done that.
So unnecessary.
I know. They could have done that in, like, one shot. It would have taken, like, 2 seconds. You don't need that, all that pauses.
In fact, the waitress didn't even need to be there in that shot, I don't think. Like, there's so much unnecessary stuff.
I know. It was so frustrating.
But speaking of the green screen thing, you brought up with the, when they go out to a club, when
Rod. Oh my God, yes, the bar.
What's her name?
There's a scene, with, is it Natalie yeah. and Rod, they go out on this date, and, like, there's a scene where they're at a bar together,
mm-hmm.
and they kind of dance. There's this two scenes where they're at a bar. This is the mm-hmm. first time, and they're, like, dancing a little bit, and, like, I'm like, something seems very off about this shot. And if you kind of pause it and look in closely, you can see it's green screen, so you can see that all those fuzzy lines around mm-hmm. them and stuff. And I'm like, what the fuck, why? Because the weird thing is, in the next scene, they go back to another bar, but it's, like, an actual bar. So it's like, could you not just use that twice? Like,
I have something interesting to note about the filming of this.
Mm.
I'm not sure what we should call it a film, but, so, James Nguyen did not ask for permission to film anywhere. They basically just showed up at places and hoped that they could shoot.
Yeah. They get, like, rejected some places here and there. Yeah.
And didn't he, like, start yelling at a passerby at a park or something?
Because
he was like,
they were
get
running
out of
or
my
something.
Frame or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, yeah.
And, like, it made everyone very uncomfortable.
Yeah.
But, like,
he made everyone uncomfortable. Like, even just talking about him, like, he's kind of a horrible person.
Because,
like, not only did he ignore, like, child labor laws while recording, he also got sued for, like, sexual harassment. And, like, he also, yeah. I don't think he got sued. It said he's getting sued for sexual harassment. I don't know what's happening with that. But he also didn't pay a lot of actors and, like, a lot of, like, crew and stuff.
Yeah, there was, like, an animator saying, that, like, he told them he needed to get this thing animated really quickly for a film festival.
Mm-hmm.
And then he gave them a check, and when they gave him the disc that had the animation on it, it might have been part of something involving the birds or, like, explosions or something.
Yeah.
and when the animator went to cash the check, it bounced, and, like, James Nguyen used the footage anyway,
yeah,
and, like, just basically stole work from someone that he used in the film.
It's insane.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Back to the cinematography.
Yeah, it was so bad. Like, it was so blurry and it was just frustrating. And they'd have, like, scenes with, like, which were too long. It's like, they would focus in on, like, background or, like, even, like, just, like, musicians and, like, stuff. And it's, like, it'd keep going on. And it's, like, stop.
Oh, and they use, oh, what's it called? It's not panning. It's when the camera rolls across a dolly, like, to give, like, a sliding effect.
Mm-mm.
Like, they use that on scenes that do not need that. Mm. Like, they use that when, during Natalie talking to her mother. They just kept doing that. It was so annoying. And then the only one good use of that was at the second club when they used it on the performer.
That was like one of the best shots on the film.
That's the only good shot on the film.
Yeah, true. Oh my God, yeah.
But even then it was used badly because that scene was so long. It should have been shorter.
It kept going on.
Cutting back between the couple dancing on the floor and like them. And you could see that there was hardly any people in the bar.
There was no one else there except them. Like, it started off with, like, I think on the side you saw two people. But then when they were dancing, it was completely empty. So I'm like, you brought up, like, they could have filled it with, like, crew and stuff.
Yeah, considering there's, like, two people on the crew or whatever, like, even, like...
Yeah, even, like, other cast as well, because they had people, like, you know, the thing with, like, the restaurant you brought out, how they had, like, that waitress there, and they could have added all those extra people, and, like, no one would have noticed, because you saw them for, like, two shots.
Or even just have, like, a mid-shot that's, like, just showing, like, mainly just the couple in the frame, like, dancing, because it's supposed to be an intimate moment anyway.
Yeah. But it was just so awkward, because they kept dancing, and it kept going on and on and on. And it was just, like, uncomfortable for everyone.
Oh, God.
Yeah. So in talking about that, let's move on to sound. The sound.
Yes, the sound. Would you like to start with the music or, like, the general audio?
We can start with the music, because the music's pretty basic. It's just, like, that one guy... I think one guy did, like, the...
Yeah.
Was it one person?
I don't believe that he actually wrote the music for this. Like, I have a hard time believing that. It sounded
like filler music, like how you'd have... If you go to, like, I don't know, like an airport or something like that. You know what I'm talking about? Like those filler music in the background of stores and stuff. Like, that's what it kind of sounded like.
So, believe it or not, we actually have three people involved in the sound. So we've got a lead sound designer, John Cregan, a sound mixer, Eric Jolly, and in charge of music was Andrew Seeger.
Mm.
Now, Andrew clearly either he didn't have a lot of time. I don't think he wrote the music that was in that film. Like,
that's why I said it sounded like filler music. Like, it's easy to pick up and stuff. Like
it sounds like the kind of stuff you could find for free on one of those websites.
Yeah, yeah.
And why? It did not match any of the scenes.
They'd have, like, intense scenes, which, like, had, like, happy music in the background.
Exactly, like, uplifting music. Like, bro, like, what are you doing? And then, like, at the start, we had, like, somewhat uplifting music or whatever, which kind of made a little bit of sense with, like, just, like, the guy just, like, driving during the long intro credits.
Yeah.
But also, it didn't make any sense because it's supposed to be a creepy movie, so, like, shouldn't they give us something that's a little bit ominous?
That's the thing. This is labeled as a horror thriller. This is not a horror thriller.
The music is not horror thriller.
Yeah. Like, the thing is with the scenes, because the scenes dragged on for so long, I think James may have tried to go for the whole, like, 70s suspense scenes, but one thing that did ruin it was the music, because, like, there was no suspenseful music that kind of dragged you on. There wasn't any jump scare music. They'd have a couple of jump scares here and there, but they'd have, sometimes in some of the scenes, they'd have, like, complete silence.
Mm-hmm.
And it just made everything so uncomfortable.
Because the annoying thing is, like, you know, in, like, those big famous movies, for instance, in The Quiet Place... That's a movie that's supposed to be silent, but we never actually get silence.
We never get silence, exactly.
Because there's always some slight noise, like whether it be footsteps, which is a really basic one, which is in every movie, except this one.
Yeah.
Because there's scenes where there's literal silence. You can see people walking on screen, but you cannot hear them walking.
Yeah.
Like, it's just so problematic. Yeah. And there's, like, moments where, like, when the camera cuts between a shot facing one way to a shot facing another way, there's a disconnect in the audio there, or there's, like, a bit of silence at one end of both of those cuts.
Yeah.
And it's, like, What are you doing?
Mm.
Stop it.
It's so frustrating. So when you're talking about sound, like if you bring in the actual like dialogue in it as well,
mm-hmm.
There was one scene, like you didn't pick that up the first time, but they're on the beach talking and Natalie?
Yeah.
Yeah, she's talking about something and then it kind of just, they cut her off midway and then there's like a whole new sentence and I'm like, she didn't even get to finish her sentence.
I'd zoned out by that point.
Yeah, yeah. But I was like, because it sounded weird because she was talking about like something and then it just kind of went onto a whole new topic. So I'm like, what the hell happened there? But at the same time, that comes into editing as well, which is a big, big issue in this.
There is so many sins in the editing of this movie.
Mm.
Like, there is so many pointless shots that they bothered to film, and therefore they're like, okay, we bothered to film that, so we may as well leave it in.
Yeah.
Like, at the start, when he's driving, he drives into a petrol station.
It's just, and what does he do in the petrol station? Yeah.
He fills up with petrol, and then he drives out of the petrol station.
Yeah, that's the thing. There were so many random, like, out-of-place shots. And unwanted shots, yeah, like that one.
We do not need to know that he needs to fill up petrol unless filling up petrol is somehow important to the story.
Mm. And there'd be, like, random scenes of just, like, scenery. And it's just, like, we get it. Like, just choose one. You didn't have to go through, like, five.
Oh, my God, yeah. You know what I mean? Like, after he and Natalie have some fun in a hotel for a night or something, in the morning, they have, like, five different shots of the town that are dead silent.
Yeah. Like, you didn't need that.
We did not need that. As, like, showing that the town is calm. But, like, they all go on for so long.
Mm. It would have, honestly, it would have been, like, 10 or so minutes. Like, maybe even more.
Like, even, like, chucking some music over that might have made it a bit better, but it was dead silent and it was so long.
Yeah. It was so frustrating.
And then, after you've had all this silence, bam, you have a frame of the town. And there's explosions and birds everywhere and it's so loud.
Mm.
And, like, I get what he was going for impact-wise, but it's just jarring.
Mm. It was so frustrating, my God. But, yeah, there's also the acting, which was very robot-like.
Mm.
The robotic acting, and it's just, like... Like, I get they would have felt uncomfortable, too, especially when it comes to, like, the dialogue and stuff like we're talking about.
The dialogue's so weird.
Yeah. So I kind of get how you can't really put any emotion in the film because it's like, you're reading through it and it's just like, what the fuck?
Oh my God, when Natalie and, what's his name, Rod first meet, he's like, oh, I don't know what he says. He's like, can I take you out for a drink sometime or something?
Mm.
And he's like, here's my card. And then she's like, here's my card. And it's like,
yeah, what?
Sure, okay, whatever.
Yeah, but even at that, there was like such weird, like, that there's a third, they, at the moment there's the main character and love interest that's introduced, but there's also the third character, which is like the gross, awful, sexist shit character and like his girlfriend. And actually the film said that they were trying to go, because they kept promoting that Imagine Peace or something.
Yeah,
that company, this is a Yoko Ono's company and stuff. I think that was like product placement, but I think what they said was James kind of wanted that side character and his girlfriend to represent John Lennon and Yoko Ono, which is kind of weird because he was really awful, the side character.
Yeah.
He was really sexist and just horrifying, and she was just kind of submissive to all of that, and I'm like, what the fuck? But yeah. Basically, he's having a conversation to his friend, which is the main character, Rod, and he's basically talking about how you should upgrade your car and stuff. Get, like, a nice, expensive...
Get a Ferrari.
Yeah, get a Ferrari and stuff like that. And then he's like, oh, Rod's like, oh, you know, the girl's, she's not materialistic or anything. And then he quotes, basically, she's my hot Ferrari. Like,
what the fuck? Because the other guy was like, get a hot Ferrari or something.
Yeah, yeah. I'm like, what the fuck? But it's kind of funny because later on in the beach, she kind of speaks about how she is materialistic because... He talks to her about, like, what her plans are if a modeling career doesn't take off. And she's basically like, I'm going to marry someone rich.
She's like, I want to marry someone who's, like, starting their own business. And he's like, well, guess what? I'm just starting my own business.
Yeah. I'm like, ugh. It's, the whole film was just so disjointed. And then 47 minutes into the film, the birds get introduced. 47 minutes it took. For the birds to get introduced. Oh my god. And since saying that, the special effects of the birds are, like, so bad. Like, they kept reusing shots and stuff of the birds.
The birds were, like, too close.
Mm.
Like, and you mentioned, like, the moment, like, when they go to the beach for the first time and spot a bird on the beach.
Yeah.
Why couldn't they have just used a stuffed bird? Like, just looks so bad.
It's laying on the beach dead. And you can see it's animated. You're like, why? Like, it would have, you literally could have just gone and gotten, like, a stuffed, it's not that expensive, like, come on.
Yeah.
But yeah. It was so weird. But, like, on top of that, like, there were so many, like, overexposed shots. And, like, the audio, like we said, kept cutting out.
Mm-hmm.
And stuff. It was just, like,
oh, at some moments, the audio was actually peaking. Mm-hmm. So, like, whoever was operating the boom didn't give it enough headroom so that it could get loud without, like, making it sound bad.
Mm.
And, oh, my God.
It was so frustrating. Oh, my God.
Like, what's the point of operating a boom if you don't know how to operate a boom?
Exactly. Yeah. Like, as you said, like, some of the cast members had to actually hold their own microphone.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like, oh, my God. Like, oh.
Another thing is, they basically, the first time they showed this special effects makeup, it was honestly the best thing in the entire film.
Yeah.
Like, they put all the efforts into that to make it look pretty realistic. And they just kind of forgot about the rest of the film.
Mm.
But yeah, it took so long for the birds to get introduced. But as we were talking about it, like, I kind of get how they wanted that suspenseful factor. But they didn't really, they kind of strayed away from the whole situation with the birds.
Mm-hmm.
Because the whole thing's focused on this weird, like, romantic connection between the two characters. But what they do is, there was kind of repetitive shots here and there of the main character Rod at home. And he'd be watching, like, this news segment, which they'd kind of bring up the whole thing with, like, climate change and the birds. But they'd just stop and no one would discuss it, like, at all. Until, like, you know, 47 minutes later when, you know, the birds get introduced.
Oh my god. So, what did you think of the message of the film?
Oh yeah, it did turn out to be a bit of an educational film.
Yes.
Because, yeah, you see this old guy for a little bit, and he talks about climate change and
bird migration. Yeah, he's supposed to be some scientist guy, and they just spot him on a bridge alone in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
At a beach.
Because he's talking about climate change, and then later on you see a tree hugger, and he talks about climate change as well. So you're kind of getting this whole thing about sustainability and kind of looking after the environment.
Yeah. Which is a positive message. It's nice.
It's just executed very poorly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's really funny, like, the tree hugger guy, he's supposed to have long hair and a ponytail, but it looks like a wig.
That's what I brought up. I was like, is he wearing a wig? Because it just looks so weird. Like, you think they could have just hired someone with long hair.
Yeah. I mean? And he's basically like, wee woo, technology bad.
Mm. And then he talks about, like, they're in, like, this forest area, and then out of nowhere, they're bringing up, like, forest fires and stuff, and then they ask him, oh, do you want to come join us? And he's like, no, I have to be here with, like, the trees and stuff. Because apparently the birds don't go in that area or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I find really funny, because they're birds. Yeah. It's nature.
Exactly. Yeah. And then out of nowhere, like, I think there's, like, mountain lion or something coming.
Yeah.
And then you hear that and you're like, what the fuck?
It's like, oh, a mountain lion. Mm. Let's go.
And then straight after that, they're running out of the forest. They use the shot twice. They show them exiting the forest, but then they show them still in the forest and running out.
And then they choose that same shot again of them exiting the forest.
Yeah. Yeah. And, like, then there's, like, a forest fire out of, like, nowhere. And it's like, what?
Another super realistic looking forest fire. It's just about as realistic as all the animation in this film. Yeah,
like, literally, like, the fire was so little, but they came out with, like, smoke on, like, ash all over their face and stuff like that. Like, they were, like, dying. Like, they were coughing so much. I'm
like, what? And it's like, there's, like, no sign of, like, smoke around them at all.
Mm.
Oh my god.
It was a mess. Yeah. But yeah, we were also wondering, like, who edited this film. So there was this person called Kim Chow, because we're like, the editing has to be one of the worst, because honestly, if they just fixed that up, they could have, a lot of the issues in the film could have been, like, you know, drowned out a little bit with editing. But yeah, basically this person's edited Birdemic as well as a film called Replica, which is equally as bad as Birdemic. But yeah, another quick behind the scenes thing was, as I brought up the new segments and stuff, I think there's only two, maybe three times they had the new segments.
Mm-hmm.
So viewers will note, some of the viewers have noticed that Nguyen couldn't even afford to have the Getty Image watermark removed from the stock footage. So you can see it on the corner. They're like, oh god. It's, yep.
Oh my god.
Do you have anything else to add?
Oh yeah, there was another message that they threw in there, because the couple that Natalie and Rod run into when they go on the run with them, they exit the house building coat hangers. He's the guy in that couple. I think he went to Iraq or something, and he was like, why can't people just leave other people alone or something? Why can't we all just be peaceful or something?
Yeah, love that. Well,
and there's freaking birds attacking you, dude. Like,
yeah.
I don't think that's, like, what's the point of bringing up peace?
The times.
When there's, like, it's not other people. It's, like, birds. And I know it's supposed to be, like, climate change or something. And, like, they're supposed to be, like, putting acid on people. But it's just...
Yeah, even with that, like, there's a scene where, like, they all get attacked because they go save, like, people. Because they go save, like, people in the bus and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And you see all these birds, and, like, this yellow thing gets poured on them. And I'm like, did the birds just pee on them? But they're all, that's like, freaking out. And I'm like, I'd freak out too if birds peed on me. Like, that's gross. But then you see them dead after. But then later on, apparently, that's meant to be acid. So I'm like, there was no confirmation.
Actually, no. It was only when I was reading the wiki article.
Yeah.
I think that's when it was, like, birds spitting acid. And I'm like, wait. Oh, that's what that was.
Yeah, it looked like pee. Come on. There was no clarification in the film itself. But yeah.
Oh my god. So, what do you think of the ending? On the beach.
Yeah.
And the end credits.
Yeah, so what they try to get is to kind of create this little family, because they managed to pick up two kids at the side of the road out of nowhere. I was like... So it ended up being the two kids... the main two characters and these two other characters that we said, like, they met at a motel. So those two excess characters got killed. So it was just the main two and these kids. So it just kind of ended with them going to a beach. I think they went to go eat, but then the birds came. But then they ran out of fuel, so they can't leave. Oh, they had, like, this little weird scene with this guy who came and attacked them and took their fuel. But the bird ended up attacking that guy, but they left the field there anyway, so, like, it was just an irrelevant scene. Like, yet they kind of want to bring in the suspense of, like, people are bad too.
And then plus, oh, they've got even less fuel now, or whatever.
Yeah.
But, like,
come on. It was just stupid. So dumb. But yeah, it just kind of ended with them on the beach, and they're just standing there, and the birds, for some reason, have just flown away and not attacking them.
Yeah.
It didn't make any explanation. There's no explanation to it, because it's like, why aren't they... Firstly, they never explained why the birds came in the... Like, they kind of brought up climate change, but they didn't really explain what made these birds kind of go crazy.
The scientist character could have explained why the birds were actually behaving how they were behaving.
He did say climate change, but we kind of presumed it may have been a virus or something.
Yeah.
Of some sort. But we had to come to that presumption ourselves, because, like, nothing was said.
The thing is, like, in Alfred Hitchcock's The Birds, like, the reason why the birds are attacking is a complete mystery, and then they also leave in a mysterious way. But, like, the thing is, like, at least it's, like it's meant to be a mystery.
It. Yeah, that's the thing is, they executed it in a really suspenseful manner. But this, they've kind of added too many genres going at the same time. It just gets confusing.
It's so confusing.
Yeah, like, I guess that's kind of what he tried to do, kind of copy that kind of situation where it's, like, they came and they went.
Oh my god, and at the end when they're, like, they're going down to the beach... Because the kids are like, I'm hungry, I want McDonald's or something.
Mm.
And, like, he's, like, fishing, and he gets this fish, and, like, they mysteriously have a stove and, like, something to cook the fish in.
Oh, yeah,
like,
he opens up the back of the car, and he's like, oh, I have, what did he say?
I've got a fishing rod.
And he's like, oh, you've got a stove too. And I'm like, what?
Like, bro. And then they go to all the effort of doing that, and then... they don't have time to eat it because the birds show up.
It's they literally cook it and stuff, and they're serving them, and then the birds come, and then they leave. And I'm like, that was such a waste of a scene.
What's the point?
Exactly. But yeah.
I thought they were going to have, like, at least some, like, bonding moment with the kids or something.
Yeah.
Nope. But nope. The birds are coming.
Mm-hmm. But yeah. It's kind of just a mess, the whole thing.
Mm-hmm. The freeze frame at the end actually looks alright because the birds are far enough away that they actually look like real birds.
Mm. That's the thing, from a distance, even like James said, they look better from a distance. And I'm like, yeah. They kind of, because what they did was with the flying scenes, they'd have two different like animations and they just kind of push them together so you could see, and, like, one
copy paste.
Yeah, basically, because one of the birds would have their wings flapping and then the other group of birds would just have their wings just kind of soaring a little bit to the left and a little bit to the right. Yeah, like some of them would be like still shots and I'm like, what? It was just weird. And like they weren't even put together, there was like there's a big difference, like you can kind of see the way they've copied and pasted, they've left like a bit of a gap in the middle, like, oh, a crooked god. gap. Oh my god, my god.
So, would you watch another James Newman film?
No. He did, though, make a film in 2017 called, like, The Man... Hold on, let me get this up. Man with a Wooden Face. It did score, like, a 4.1 out of 10.
Damn, that's a personal best.
Yeah, it's a documentary-style film as well, with just three cast members, so I think that's an improvement for him, going from, like, multiple, like random people to, like, you know, three solid characters. But yeah,
oh my god.
I feel like maybe he's improving, but at the same time, he still thinks he doesn't realize the issue in his films, which is a bad thing. Because, like, I did compare this to The Room and stuff, because at least with The Room, like, Tommy, at the start, he was frustrated that people were, like, you know, thought of his film as kind of like a mockery, as a joke. But then, you know, he accepted it after that, and now he laughs at his own films.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of what you need. You kind of need that factor of the director being like, okay, this film's a joke. Let's just go along with it.
Mm.
Instead of being pulled back and being like, no, no.
And as you pointed out, like, The Room is so good it's bad.
Mm.
Where, I mean, so bad it's good. But so this bad, one's good, yeah. Like, so bad.
It's just bad.
It's bad.
Yeah.
Because, like, would you want to talk about, like, the difference with, like, the film techniques actually being good in The Room?
Yeah, because with The Room, the thing is, the only bad thing in The Room is the scripting and the acting, the two things. Because what Tommy did was everything was really high quality. Like, no one knows where he got the budget for this film. It was a huge budget, though. Mm. Like, it's so funny, because I actually watched I wouldn't call it what's his name? James Franco did their film, which is kind of the background of, like, what happened.
Mm-hmm.
But in that, like, even, like, they were like, you know, there's such a big budget. Nobody knows where Tommy got all this money from.
Mm.
He just pulled it out of somewhere. But he basically did so many shots. You'll see it's like, it looks like they're in the outdoors. They're like, there's like a garden or something. And it would be like a scene. He would like actually get a studio and like, you know, just set it out that way. So it's like, it's so relevant. But at the same time, he controlled
the camera people, the editing. Mm. All that stuff is good, like, all the
actual filmmaking. He had a lot of it. Just the thing, if you watch the film itself, you'll see, like, the camera, everything's really nice, nothing's shaky. It's just, the funniest thing is obviously just the dialogue. It's just so random and stupid. But it's like, you can live with that, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you can just make a mockery of that. But when it comes to things like audio being cut off, or, like, not hearing the actors, or even, like, the shaky cameras, that just pulls you away. It's kind of like, oh, I don't want to see this.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's the thing. Like, with Tommy's, the only bad thing was basically just, like, it was just funny. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It's stupid. It's like a mockery kind of thing.
Mm.
But yeah, have you seen it?
Yeah. Yeah, I've seen The Room and the James Franco movie.
It's just so good. It's so funny. Mm. But, like, this was just, like, you couldn't hear what was going on, so, like, you couldn't really pick up what was happening. But yeah. I didn't like it. I want it to be over.
Very frustrating.
Yeah.
Might be good for an afternoon to just pull apart with a friend, but for rewatching.
Yeah, no. I refuse to. I've, like, the thing is, I've rewatched, like, The Room, like, about 5 or 6 times. Because it gets funnier the more you watch it. But I feel like with this, the more you watch it, the more you, like, slowly just want to die.
<It's> like, basically.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Mm. Any final thoughts?
Yeah. Well, I didn't even put a spoilers alert on this, because I don't even think you're going to watch this. Honestly.
Well, unless if you've already seen it, because you know.
Yeah. Like, I think just listening to this is more than enough.
Yep.
Yeah. But yeah, I can't even say anything good about the film. Like, there was nothing. I didn't like it at all.
Like, I feel like possibly one error that might have been avoided was to, like, write a story that you can actually do on a low budget.
That's the thing, there's so many, because he wanted to go with the whole, like, suspense thriller, and I find that the best suspense thrillers are not are the unknown, like not actually having a specific like threat. Like exactly. There is a threat, but like the ominous. I think that's what he was trying to go for, like because he wanted to go like the birds and stuff. So it's like you could have just made it super ominous, like not actually seeing the threat. You know what I mean? Because he did the special effects makeup was really good. He could have just focused on like the deaths itself.
Yeah, he could have done like silhouettes or like shadows of the birds. He could have done it at night. Birds.
You know what I mean? Like he could have done like owls instead. You know what I mean? Like night creatures. It's like you can't see it, but you can. If he added in like more suspenseful music, which wouldn't be that hard to find. Like, let's be real, like you can pick up free stuff here and there. Yeah, if he kind of focused in on the factor of night, which is more suspenseful than day, which this whole film was in day, so like during the daytime nothing's as scary as it is at night
basically. And so, if he could just avoid like showing the birds and like or even write a script that maybe doesn't have birds in it, you know?
Yeah, he could have just done an ominous threat, so, like, no one knows what it is. Like, people are dying. Like, something's out there, but we don't know. That would have made it scary.
Because
if you don't know what the threat is, you don't know, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, ugh.
And, like, even, like, avoiding having explosions on screen, because you clearly can't afford explosions.
So yeah. And the guns and stuff, like, you could have just had them use, like, normal, easy protection stuff. Like, you know, like, bats or, like, something easy and have in their budget. Because he used guns, but, like,
the guns... baseball bats or something would have been better.
Yeah, because what he did was he had guns, and when they shot at the birds, they'd have this, like, repetitive noise. Like, they'd... Just, like, three shots, but they'd reuse it again and again and again.
And they wouldn't even intersperse the three... anything else. Like, it was just constantly that.
And so it would go so loud, I'd keep turning down the volume, because it'd get super loud with the gunshots.
Yeah, and the audio whoever was in charge of the audio didn't compress it.
Yeah.
At all.
Yeah, it was a mess. Oh my god. But yeah.
Well, I think that's all I've got to say about this one. Oh, do you want to talk about what we're going to be doing next week?
Oh, yes. Not next week. For the next podcast episode in a fortnight, we're going to be discussing and dissecting the three Blair Witch Project films, because what I brought up was he could have actually, because the camera angles were so bad and they clearly had no idea how to use the cameras as well, they could have actually gone for the whole handheld camera effect, because from my knowledge the Blair Witch Project was one of the first films to make it big in the whole like full like handheld camera kind of situation, because even them, they had a really low budget, but they managed to kill it, because like I said, the whole suspense, that's what they did. They felt, because no one knew the threat, no one could see the threat, it was just most of the film was at night, so there was just so much suspense. Like, just thinking about it now, like, it freaks me out, because like I've only seen the movie once and it freaked the shit out of me, because you don't know what's happening, you know what I mean?
I'll be excited to watch that one.
It's really good. But this three, those the original one's the best. Then there's a 2000s one that I've never heard of, which is meant to be a sequel, so I don't think it's going to be that great. And then there was a 2017 one, I think, which was our most recent remake. But that is more... I think you actually see the threat in it, which I don't like that, because I like the whole like suspense thing they had going on. But it also means it's going to be scarier, because like scary faces and jump scares, you know, had 2017. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. Like, lately, I feel like a lot of horror films are just focused on the suspenseful factor and stuff of everything.
Yeah.
But yeah. Well,
it'll be exciting to compare a what to do versus what not to do with a low budget horror film.
Exactly. Yeah. Because, yeah, the Blair Witch is like what, like the best like example of what to do with a low budget film.
Anyway, I think that's about all for this week.
This week, yeah.
See you next time.
Okay. Bye for now.